Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody. Oh, you've done it. I can't believe you've done that twice. I cannot believe you've done that twice. That's not happened. Hasn't happened once this season, and you've done it twice on the decisive night. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Forza Italian Football Podcast. As always, I am your host, Connor Clancy, finally managing to introduce the podcast. I've had some struggles because of the disruptive Kev Pogzielski, who is unfortunately here again. Kev, hello.
Hi, Connor. Lovely to be here.
Have you finished disrupting me?
I hope so, yes.
Right. Well, I'm gonna have to try and interrupt you twice over the course of this podcast to restore some sort of parity and equality. We're also joined by someone who is always polite and never disrupts either of us. It's Vito Doria. Vito, hello.
Hello, Connor. I'm feeling all right. I mean, obviously I could be a bit better, but how are you, Connor? How are you feeling?
I know you've only asked that because I had a go at the two of you last week, and I deliberately didn't ask you how you were this week, so I wanted to see what you'd do. I'm all right, Vito. Obviously, it's slightly... I don't want to say relieving, but we know who has won the title now, right? There's some of the suspense around the Serie A season, which has lasted for the best part of a year now, is over, because it was always going to be them, Kev. Juve, they've won their 9th in a row. It's their 36th. Yes, Juventus fans, it's your 36th altogether. But Kev, 9 Scudetti in a row is a remarkable achievement. It doesn't matter who you support, right?
Yeah, it's a remarkable achievement on a club level. I think if you're looking at a league, I'd just be a little bit concerned with what it says about the league. Not necessarily the quality, but where we are in a position for others to come along and challenge. Although that said, before we entered lockdown, we had a very tight title race, and then Atalanta and the others have pushed them to this third to last weekend of the season.
Yeah, that's promising, no, Vito, that they won the league with only 2 games to spare.
Oh, it's a good sign. We can talk about how, in a sense, the Bianconeri have, in a way, limped over the line, or have had quite a few close escapes since the return of Serie A in June. When you consider that there have been teams that have really had some good runs or good spells over this very long season, I think it shows that, you know, there potentially are some teams that can, possibly provide more of a fight next season if they're able to get some more consistent results or re-strengthen their squads even better, because on any given day, I think there are quite a few sides that are capable of really being near the top or amongst the best in Serie A. But yeah, again, Juve's experience proved to be vital.
Yeah, well, what I think is something you were alluding to there with the experience and adding, needing to add more, kind of touches onto where I wanted to go, because they did this. They won this latest title, Kev, without Giorgio Chiellini for most of the season. And okay, Buffon returned, but obviously last season he wasn't there. This season he was there as a support role more than anything else. And if you look back over the last few seasons, they've also lost important players like Claudio Marchisio, Mario Mandzukic, Barzagli, Lichtsteiner, and they just keep winning. That like culture that's so ingrained in the club, I mean, it doesn't look like it's going to end anytime soon.
No, but unlike Buffon, Bonucci, Chiellini, those players all stayed, and you look at it now, we expect Pjanic to be leaving. I'm not 100% sure that's been confirmed. That,
yeah, he's gone.
That experience of sort of Scudetto winners, you know, seems to, you know, be let go at some point, whereas the others have stayed for, you know, sometimes well over a decade and sort of maintain that continuity. So it's a different type of experience if they've got to sort of recover that and keep it there. I'm not sure how many of the sort of current players in their late 20s would be there in their mid 30s. So it'll be interesting because none of them have got that sort of connection that you obviously associate with Buffon and Chiellini and those players that we just mentioned.
Does having Buffon just being there help?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you look just today, after Danilo suffers the head injury, which hopefully we'll talk about the ridiculousness of trying to keep him on the pitch, Buffon is down from his seat, talking to players, officials on the team. You know, he's clearly talking to people about, you know, maybe even discussing what they should be doing, maybe who's coming on when they do eventually make the substitution. And you've seen that quite a lot this season where they've turned to him. It's not just been sort of sat there watching the game, you know, just going through the motions, happy to pick up another title and maybe even finally get the Champions League winner's medal at the end of the season that he's been so craving. And that experience and contribution he's making probably is playing a part in their success this season.
Yeah, and you look at, this is obviously Maurizio Sarri's first season in the job, Vito. They've managed to win the title, which is kind of the least Juve fans would have expected when he took over. But is there an argument to say that if Juve were going to slip up in the next couple of seasons, this was the year they do it when they were trying to adapt to Sarrismo? Because next year they've got Dejan Kulusevski and Artur Melo already coming in, who are more suited to Sarri's style than some of the players he has there at the moment. So surely they're only going to get better under Sarri, assuming he's still in the job.
I would like to think that Juventus can get better with players that are more suited to Sarrismo, but Juventus do probably need a few more additions if they are to continue with Sarri. And more, and in particular, the midfield does need a good shake-up. The way you have played this season, they haven't always been convincing, but the same can be said under Allegri. Juventus were pragmatic under Allegri, whereas here, Sarri has tried to implement his tactics, but although they have got the results, the performances haven't really been forthcoming as such, and I reckon, at least for their sake, maybe if they just put a weakened squad for the next two games, it's okay. But at this stage, I'm feeling pretty pessimistic about the chances against the French side because De Ligt came off injured. Danilo came off early as well. And also, Douglas Costa, he's now out for the remainder of the season and he's already an injury-prone player. So, and Dybala, he too had to come off with an injury. So, it's not looking ideal at this stage. And I think Champions League football really needs to be the ultimate for Juve. That's what they really need to improve on. And if they lose to Lyon, you can talk about the circumstances, but I think to be eliminated at the round of 16 is worse than what Juve did under Allegri.
Kev, I'm going to come to you. Vito has mentioned what they did under Allegri, and I'm going to extend that back to Conte as well. It's kind of a two-part question, all right? So stick with me. The first part is very, very simple. Where does this title rank amongst their last nine? And the second part of that is kind of something I've stolen from a podcast I'm a big fan of, which is the Spanish Football Podcast. I don't know if any of you listen to it, but if you like Spanish football, listen to that. And it's whose title is this? Because very often you see a title of one and someone will point at a player and say, he's the reason Juve won this title. Or sometimes it's a coach. Is this Sarri's, Dybala's, Cristiano's, Szczesny's, or is it more of a collective thing?
Okay, I'll answer the second question first because I think it's the easiest one because kind of a collective effort up until the point where we went into lockdown. They were closely matched with Lazio. But then what's got them over the line? I think that's Paolo Dybala after we've come back. Really? You know, now whether that's... I read something where they were saying that Sarri had actually told Dybala to stop coming back so much to drop the ball this... to get the ball this year and actually go up and support Ronaldo. Now, if that's happened, then obviously Sarri's had an impact on how well Dybala's, you know, done this year because he's been playing closer to goal. You know, it's been somewhat tactical. But I think for... the sheer contribution to wins and maybe even some of the points that they've picked up when, say, losing to Atalanta have been crucial to that title win. So I'd say Dybala. Where we rank it within the last nine, I don't think you can rank anything above the first under Conte when they came back because of where they come back from. Then probably the 2015 when they could have won the treble, but also Allegri. It was Allegri's first season, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Then you've got the season after that where Allegri had lost Pirlo, Pogba, Vidal, and there was kind of an evolution of the side, and they might have got a points total or something that year. You know, so many of these, we've seen so many totals now, they just sort of roll into one. So this. Because of the challenges that they've had, because we've done it through a pandemic, because the obvious rear guard hasn't been there that they've had during some of those other total successes, and maybe we've needed different players to sort of pull Juventus out. And that's how they've won a lot of games this year. It's unlike Atalanta, unlike maybe Lazio, where it's been a sort of a collective pull as a team. What's got Juve over the line this season, I would say, is individual talent. At one time or another, just one person standing out. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe fourth, possibly sort of fifth in the last nine totals that they've won.
Not bad then, right? I mean, if you're in a position where you're ranking your favourite title, you're not doing too badly, are you?
I think probably because also it's Sarri's first season. Mm. So, you know, I think people just expect that that's a given. But lots and lots of coaches over the years have taken on a total winning side. Well, not that many usually because you don't usually get sacked or walk away, but coaches have done it and then failed, you know, for whatever reason, not getting on with the players. You know, you've got a big personality like Cristiano Ronaldo. You never know how he's going to get on with a coach. You know, he's seen plenty in Real Madrid when he was there, come in and, you know, famously Rafa Benitez was out the door quite quickly after he came in. So, I think it deserves a fair bit of credit, this Scudetto.
Agreed. I don't think you can take anything away from any team who win a title. Cup competition, Champions League, okay, a little bit different, but if you've been proven to be the best team over the course of 38 games and you've done that by extension over the last nine seasons, I mean, hats off. So congratulations from everyone at Forza Italian Football to Juventus and everyone associated with the club, fans, players, coaches, press people, everybody. Remarkable achievement. We will, of course, dive into the Scudetto win a little bit more on the season review pod, which we will do after round 38 has been wrapped up. But we do kind of have to move on just with the round 36 fixtures for now. Lazio, Vito, they basically disappeared for a while. And then once they couldn't win the Scudetto anymore, they switched it on. They went away to Verona, one of the most difficult places to go in Serie A this season. They went 1-0 down. And somehow, in pretty much everything they did was after the 45th minute, they scored five goals and beat Verona 5-1.
Yeah, looking at the scoreline, it was quite a comprehensive win, and there were some nice goals, but of course, a bit of assistance from the penalty spot too, so I think that added a bit more to the scoreline. And that being said, I think it really is a case of too little too late as far as the Scudetto race is concerned, but at least for Lazio, given the team that they do have, and when you consider they are a team that really lacked depth, I think just for them to be in a Champions League spot for the first time since 2007, for them, I'm sure they'll be more than happy just to get into the competition proper once again.
Yeah, well, Alistair was big on that being their big success this season, something that they were desperate to do. Kev, you are half smirking. Are you not willing to give Lazio credit for getting back into the Champions League?
No, it was. I wasn't smirking for that reason. They can have plenty of credit for getting back in the Champions League. It was reminding me that I think it must be maybe Friday evening. I was sort of going through social media, and somebody, I can't name them because I can't remember who it was, put a picture of Claudio Lotito up, looking very dour, and I think the tagline was the look of a man who finally knows he's got to put his hand in his pocket because you've reached the Champions League. So whoever did put that up, it was very funny, and we shall see.
Yeah, do you think they will spend?
I was having this discussion this afternoon over lunch. I think it's going to be an extremely strange transfer market across the entirety of Europe, where someone's going to have to wait for another team to make the first move, maybe to sort of start a domino effect of players moving, because the whole pandemic has made it very strange for clubs' finances.
On that, Kev, sorry, but that's one of my interruptions. But on a serious note, do you think that clubs will be hesitant to spend money almost more out of how it will make them look rather than it being because they can't afford it?
I actually don't think it will be in the club's hands. I think it will come down from players that are probably not necessarily going to be released, but would usually move on, are probably unlikely to be able to request the wages that they would elsewhere. And it's more that the power somewhat rests with the players, and if these clubs are able to move them on. I think if then your budget doesn't allow it, I think it becomes very difficult. The only side in Europe we've really seen move with any money is Chelsea, but they kind of had a two transfer window ban because they chose not to do anything in the latter one once they'd had their ban uplifted, and they're spending that money now, but it's not really being then spent by the other clubs that are taking that money in. So yeah, I don't know if it's necessary down to the clubs wanting to maybe not look at splashing the catch, or whether they don't know where they're going to get rid of the excess weight of their squads.
Often we say that summers are going to be interesting based on us expecting and anticipating a lot of transfers. This year is going to be interesting because it's going to be new, because there can't be the same level of transfers. Vito, Ciro Immobile did score a hat-trick. Two of them were penalties in stoppage time at the end of each respective half. But he's taken his tally onto 34 goals for the season now, and there are still two games left. He'll fancy his chances to beat Gonzalo Higuain's 36 from a few years ago.
Well, I would expect him to, because I remember when Higuain had to chase the previous record of AC Milan striker Gunnar Nordahl. He had to score at least two or three for Napoli in that game.
I think he scored six in the last two rounds that season.
Yeah, so yeah, he had to score bucket load towards the end to smash the record, whereas Immobile has two games to just score two more goals to equalize it. So I think that's a strong possibility. And given that, you know, he does take the penalties, I think, assuming Lazio get a couple in those games, I think you'll be more than capable of equalising or even beating that record.
Yeah, well, Kev, they do play Brescia next, I think it is, and then they finish the season at Napoli, which, of course, for Immobile being Napolitano, takes on extra significance. It would be quite nice for him to get the record in his hometown.
Yeah, I think it would be nice, actually, if he broke it next week and he can really extend it in Naples. Obviously, it's where Higuain broke the record with Lazio. I really sort of question what's going on with penalties. And I know we discussed this before coming on air, Vita, about the last one, which I have no idea.
He's gone.
I thought that message was of you. Sorry, Connor. I thought you were telling me to chat amongst ourselves. Yeah, sorry. So you saw it. You saw it, Connor. The last penalty, which was just nowhere near a penalty. And again, something on social media I saw when that was being discussed was the increase in penalties this year. And I can't work out, because obviously we've had the dodgy handball calls, which you could argue the first penalty for Lazio was exactly the same. So 10 years ago, the average number of penalties was just under 3 penalties a weekend, and that's gone up to 5 this year, although it was 3.21 last season. And I just wonder if that's the VAR, the poor officiating. And I know you tweeted something actually earlier about Immobile and Ronaldo, those goal-scoring stats about penalties, and they'd only be on 18. And it just seems astonishing. I know they are penalty takers for their clubs, but that they reach these figures with this increase in strikes this year. I know, sorry, it sounds like I'm just sort of trying to take away from Immobile's season, but what do you think?
No, it's actually something I was going to raise as well, because I did see a tweet. I cannot remember who it was from either, but basically the Capocannoniere standings without penalties would have Immobile and Ronaldo both on 18. And then there's like 3 players on 17 and a couple more on, I think, 16 or 15. So it kind of does show how tight it has been, other than those penalties, which you'd like to see a Capocannoniere awarded with penalties excluded, penalties worth half a point. You know the way in the Golden Boot, different leagues are given different point systems. Maybe penalties should be given 0.5 in Golden Boot races.
Or maybe even if it's that's the decider for you know, who sort of tips it over. I know they do something in the major tournaments now, don't they, where if there's a draw, it goes on assists. But yeah, I don't know. It was certainly a questionable hat trick for Immobile under
Speaking of penalties in the Capocannoniere race, it was quite funny to see Cristiano Ronaldo step up and thump one off the crossbar, which would have made it 3 for you, Victor. I did laugh aloud when he hit that off the crossbar, and I felt only just a little bit guilty for it, not overly so. But I don't know, Vito, what are your thoughts on the whole Capocannoniere race? Immobile, Ronaldo, who would you prefer to see take it?
I would prefer to see Immobile, simply because he doesn't play for Juventus. It's good to see a bit of variety, especially given what we've seen in the last 10 years. So for a non-Juve player to win something or get some praise for something is always worth seeing. Last season, we saw Fabio Quagliarella take the Capocannoniere title, and Immobile has done it before. So I reckon he deserves to add another one to his CV.
Ex-Genoa, though, Vito. You're happy with that, are you?
Well, everybody has the dark side, I suppose. Well, he was a flop there, so he had to leave there to play better again. So.
All right. On to the other team in Rome. And Kev, I'm going to come to you first, because Roma, they won. I actually wanted to come to you for both of the talking points about this game, but they won. Although, you were tweeting about this, you're not very happy about the way in which Roma won this game against Fiorentina?
Terrible. Absolutely terrible. The decision was almost as bad as the first 70 minutes of the game. The first 70 minutes, largely nothing happened. I'll make notes when I'm watching the game. 30 minutes in, has anything happened? 40 minutes in, question mark. Then they get a penalty, which was, again, I'll probably argue that was a questionable penalty. It was a knee in the back of Perez, but he didn't half make a meal of it. But the final penalty decision is where Kolarov, I think, takes a shot. Goalkeeper saves, runs loose. The goalkeeper does very well, actually, to get back on it, up on his feet. And actually, the only thing I'd say what he does wrong here is he's approaching Dzeko, who's coming in to strike the ball, is he leads with his feet. I think actually, if he leads with his arms, Dzeko gets to the ball, you know, at least half a second before him and gets his shot off, misses, hits the side netting, and that's almost the end of it. But for some reason, the referee pulls him up for a foul on Dzeko. Now, my argument with these collisions, and it's a little bit like when a winger sort of knocks it on and then just sort of delays for the contact. Not that Dzeko did this, I must say. I don't think Dzeko was actually maybe even expecting the penalty. But contact does not mean a foul, you know, because he's not impeded him getting the ball. He's not stopped him getting a shot off. Okay, he's disrupted him taking maybe the shot he wanted if he stayed on his line. But from like 2 or 3 yards, I think that's entirely within the goalkeeper's right. And for the referee, sorry, to then just call it back and give them a penalty kick. In any age, VAR age, you know, pre whoever organises the referees, shall we say, it's just astonishing. It looks.
You've made a serious point there, though, and it's something that's bothered me as well for a while. And I do think I'm in favour of VAR, but I do think the addition of VAR has only accentuated this, what I would consider a problem, is that so often now, if there's contact, it's deemed to be a foul. And like you said, contact doesn't mean a foul. And then there's like a next step, which is that if there's a foul, it has to be a yellow card. And that's not the way that the rules say it is. Contact doesn't mean a foul, and a foul doesn't equate to a yellow card every single time. And it does seem like, especially when the referees do check their monitor, like if there's a debatable penalty decision now, if a referee sees contact, they'll say, okay, yeah, that is a penalty now. And I do think it's slightly problematic.
Yeah, and I think the rule, I think it's been brought in fully across Europe, is this whole double, I think they call it the double jeopardy rule, where if you're given a penalty, it doesn't necessarily have to be a red card.
The triple punishment, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's brought the automatic yellow card for a foul. You know, because, look, so I don't know if you remember the first penalty, the Verona penalty from Lazio.
Yeah.
You know, the defender's silly to sort of continue his run across, you know, where the player's cutting across him. I think you slow your run, let him go. But there's contact there. It's just clip of the heels. Now, I'm not sure if Felipe got booked for that because I didn't go really in depth into the things from the game, but the refs now just automatically give a booking because in previous seasons they would have given them a red card because they've given them a penalty because that kind of was what happened, and we've now got into a different situation which is equally as farcical.
Yeah, as far as I know, there wasn't a booking given out for that first one, but yeah, I do take your point. It is something that just seems to happen now, and it's unfortunate. But Vito, this is a result that I suppose it doesn't really matter to anybody, does it? I mean, Roma are now 4 points clear of Milan, but again, does that make any difference to anyone?
No, because the Champions League spots have been sealed up. At this stage, yeah, the Europa League is pretty much the same. And Fiorentina, well, they're pretty much safe anyway. So, yeah, it's just another game. You're just playing for the sake of completing the season and nothing more.
It does seem to be the case, right? And you look at the way some of these games are played, this was a complete example of it, right? With Alistair McKenzie kind of tweeted that it was a hot day in Rome and everything, and that probably contributed to the slow start. But I guess, Vito, so does the fact that the games are getting less and less important and everyone's completely knackered from the heat and the recent like fixture pileup.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Yeah, well, I think just the way things are, again, it's a matter of circumstances, the unique circumstances that we're in, to play all these games at once and to do it in the middle of Europe summer. Doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete or not, surely that's going to be taking a toll on anyone. And I think for a lot of teams, they're feeling the effects. I was thinking about this over the last 48 hours. I've seen La Liga and the Premier League come to a close. The Bundesliga has already finished. But Serie A teams, for those who are going to be playing in Europe, they won't have any respite. And they've got to go straight in, especially Juventus, who have to finish the second leg of the round of 16 Champions League ties. So, yeah, it's really a matter of consistent playing. And, yeah, I do have some sort of concerns about the Italian teams heading into those European fixtures if they can sort of maintain their form.
I don't think that matters too much, Vito. I was listening to someone speaking about, I think specifically Bayern Munich, that actually they obviously wrapped their league up a couple of weeks early, their league title up a couple of weeks early, and now they've got this gap, you know, and they've been sort of squeezing in sort of practice games and sort of friendlies to sort of keep their hand in, so to speak. And actually others have been saying, well, actually continuing to play, so it's almost like a real season, so you've not had that gap and you've got you know, your match fitness and your match sharpness and everything ready could play into the hands of the teams that have been playing this late. I mean, when it comes into play is actually next year, if the Champions League final now is the 23rd of August, and if you're starting even in the last week of September or first week of October, come say the last third of next season, we could see very, very tired teams. Maybe if it's the teams competing in Europe this season are tired next year, you can get some very odd results. And maybe if we had a scenario like this year, Juventus wouldn't be so lucky. Could be because they'd be dead on their feet.
Kev, do you have a question for us?
I did, yes. Just on the Roma-Fiorentina game, as you said, it was close to the end of the season. Nothing else matters. So Roma choose to don their new home shirt for the first time. And it was getting a lot of praise on social media. And I'm not sure where I sit with this. So it was just kind of your guys' feeling on. I think the only reason it's getting praise, and I particularly think it's quite nice, is because their other kits have been so similar for the last sort of five or six seasons. It's actually just nice to have a bit of a change. And I wondered whether I was just being an old, miserable sod as usual, Connor.
Well, you always are, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're always wrong. But with this Roma kit, I was like you for a while, you know. I wasn't quite sure how I felt about it. I did think it was being overly adored online, but now that I've seen it on the players, I've warmed to it. I do think it is quite nice. What I really, really like, and I initially didn't, is that the colours that are behind the crest and the Nike tick, they continue around on the back too, which I think is nice. It does mean that the name looks very, very high up, but I'm not sure Kev agrees with me on that, but I like the fact that it continues around to the back of the shirt.
That was something I didn't like, but I'd also like I'd also quite like a return to the white shorts and black socks, just even for a season, but that's me being a real traditionalist.
You've gone too far. Sorry. Roma have always done nice kits, though, to be fair, under Nike. Even when they wear their kits when they shouldn't, that blue kit that they wear is beautiful. And they've consistently had nice away shirts, too.
Well, with Roma, they do tend to have those similarities with the kits. From what I read, the new jersey that they're wearing for 2020-21 is similar to a design that they had for the 1979-80 season. So it's a bit of a retro design, this one, trying to make things a little bit different. So yeah, it's something interesting. I probably might need a bit of time to warm to it because I have been so accustomed to what they've had for the last, say, 30 to 40 years. But they usually do have a nice blend of colors, you know, the yellow and the red. So I suppose it's always good to mix things up without being too tedious, like, for instance, Juve with the Siena like jerseys. I thought to abandon the black and white stripes or the traditional ones was pretty bad, but something like this Roma one's not too bad. Actually, without going too far off topic, has anyone seen the latest Inter jerseys? Or rumoured ones for 2020-21.
I think they're confirmed and they're equally horrific.
Oh, yeah. Well, as I said in a Facebook group, I said as a jersey, I'd give it a 1 out of 10. But if it was a tablecloth, probably be an 8 out of 10.
It's something, isn't it? Like, it is strange. It was kind of a week for people losing their minds about stuff that, like, shouldn't really be all that important. And I love a football kit. But the new Serie A ball, Kev, has also been designed. And, right, everyone seemed to just decide, let's laugh at this. And nobody seemed to look at it. Am I missing something? Like, why does everyone hate this so much, other than the fact that it might resemble a plastic ball?
Yeah, it's I saw this. Well, I didn't see the Serie A one, but a few weeks ago the Premier League didn't launch the same ball, and it's got these really thick ridges in it. And actually, the only comparison then is the sort of design on it. And I think for the English Premier League next year, they've just gone with a plain black Nike tick. And we've got a splash of blue on the Serie A one next season. But I think, it's just the amount of sort of deep ridges in it that it kind of resembles, like you say, a plastic, not even football, but maybe volleyball. But to be honest, it's only when you're looking at stills like that on social media that you ever even realise anyway.
Yeah, exactly. A few years ago, they had a great ball that was half pink, half white, and you could see the pink on it as it floated. I bought like 4 of them just for messing about with in the park and that, because it was nice. But I don't get why people are lashing out at the ball. I think someone popular did it, so everyone joined in. It's fine. It's blue and white. It looks fine. Just get over it, basically. What was probably the biggest game of the weekend on paper anyway was Milan-Atalanta. Vito finished 1-1. That's about it. Both teams look quite tired.
They did, and I thought Atalanta in particular looked pretty tired. Remo Freuler, again, with another solid performance on his part, he played well. He still looked like he was more energetic than his teammates, but couldn't really say the same about the rest of them. And I thought Hans Hatterborg was probably one player that didn't really impress me as much as he usually does. So, yeah, that was a bit interesting. But, in general, I was personally expecting more more goals from this game. I was probably expecting like a 3-3 or even something crazier like a 4-4 draw, but was it to be? They have been the two informed teams since the return of Serie A, and I think, given the context, there isn't much left to play for, but they're still good sides, and they still deserve praise for how they have played leading up into this specific game.
Kev, Luca Antonini, ex-Milan fullback, obviously came out, I think it was Sunday, and said that if he were in charge at Milan, he wouldn't touch anything this summer. He'd only bring in a couple of experienced players as like backup people. But is that missing something? Are this Milan side, as they are, as a starting 11, good enough to go one better next season and qualify for the Champions League?
Well, the way they've performed after Pioli's come in, you could argue that maybe with a couple of slight additions. Again, go back to what we were discussing earlier. I think the fact that there won't be much movement across a lot of Italy could work for them. And let's face it, they've had summers where they've kind of had widespread changes, whether that's being buying past it mediocre players or focusing on youth that haven't quite come good yet. So maybe sticking with what they've got and two, maybe three minor additions, but that experience and quality will be of huge benefit.
There was someone at Milan who was very, 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 very happy this weekend. Kev, I hope you've seen this because I brought your attention to it on Twitter, which is Pepe Reina, who has, I think it's fair to say, completed a successful transition from professional athlete to professional cheerleader now. He's obviously on loan at Aston Villa, and they stayed up this weekend, and obviously, as he did with Bayern Munich, as he did with Spain, without ever playing, he was leading the celebrations in the dressing room afterwards.
Yeah, it was a funny video. I've got a lot of time for Pepe. I was lucky enough to find myself in an airport waiting lounge with him coming back from Barcelona a few seasons after he joined Liverpool, and he was an absolute gentleman. When you're talking about some of the experience that Milan want, you know, that was someone where you thought it was probably not beneficial to them because Donnarumma is still very young. But everywhere he's gone, it's less that there are backup goalkeepers that kind of sit in the shadows and have never really been good enough to be number one. Whereas I think with Reina, it was an issue that, I think the likes of Graham Hunter have written about this, where he was just kind of the wrong generation or in the wrong place at the wrong time. If you look at who he's had to sort of sit behind, they've been some of the best goalkeepers of their generation, if you just name Casillas and Manuel Neuer. It's good to see him do that. I don't imagine he'll come back after his loan. He must be 38 now. I think I might have a year on him. And I made up for the lad.
All right, moving on. I should say we do have a new game this evening that we will get to very, very shortly because we're going to fly through the rest of them. And I think Kev's going to struggle with the new game.
Yep.
Sorry, Kev. But Napoli beat Sassuolo 1-0 despite conceding four goals, or at least thinking they conceded four goals. But Vito, again, I was left confused a lot this weekend. And this is another example of that because everyone seemed angry that Sassuolo were robbed of four goals, but correct me if I'm wrong, each of the four goals were correctly disallowed.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was watching the game and I had to do the report for this 2-0 victory. And I think in all four cases, they deserve to be disallowed. So on the first goal, the linesman called it right away. He disallowed Juricic's first goal. And then for the other three, the referee Gianluca Aureliano, he had to go to VAR, and VAR in both times made the right call. Sassuolo, unfortunately, were offside in those positions. And again, I think this is where the worst parts of social media tend to manifest itself, you know. Just that I think a lot of people just want controversy, or they're just looking to be outraged for the sake of being outraged. There's just so much negativity online, and not enough people are willing to call a spade a spade. You've got to forget hypotheticals and circumstances. Just look at the incidents for what they are. And unfortunately, the calls against the Nero Verdi were more than justified. And it is a shame, because that actually, you know, the movements for all the goals were actually pretty nice to watch. So hopefully in the next game, they can actually stay onside, the goal stand, and once again, they can maintain the reputation of one of culture's entertainers.
Yeah, yeah, certainly. Genoa lost 3-0 to Inter, but the story from this is not that Romelu Lukaku scored a brace. It's that Alexis Sanchez proved again, Kev, that he is one of the best players in Serie A post-lockdown.
Yeah, and I think I said a couple of weeks ago just that he finally had a break from sort of consistent summers, and, you know, maybe the lockdowns allowed him to train a little bit more. Less intensity, you know, to focus on sort of recovery as opposed to sort of getting himself ready for the next game. And he's maybe playing for his future. Again, something I probably said last time.
It does seem like a difficult situation for him, obviously, because his wages are astronomical as well. Would have been hard to afford before a global pandemic that's had financial implications as well. So it remains to be seen what happens there. What happened elsewhere? Parma came from behind to win at Brescia. Dejan Kulusevski, a little bit of a mention for him, Vito, because he's been doing it all season, and he did it again at Brescia with a stunning goal with what is frighteningly enough his weak foot.
Yeah, it's a scary thought. He's a natural left footer, but the way he curled in the winner was absolutely sublime. Quite a few goals this season, I've already compared some strikes from other players to being in that sort of vein that the likes of Del Piero, Roberto Baggio and Gianfranco Zola would score, you know, where they're on the left side of the pitch or near the penalty box on the outside of it, and they would just curl it into the top corner. Kulusevski scored another goal in that style, and yeah, it was an absolute beauty, and yeah, another excellent goal for the youngster, and probably for Juventus's sake, I'm sure the Bianconeri fans can look forward to what he might offer them next season.
Kev, Bologna beat Lecce 3-2 rather. Bologna were 2-0 up, Lecce came back to 2-2, and then Muzabarro won it in stoppage time for Bologna to break Lecce hearts. Lecce are now 4 points off Genoa. There's only 2 games left. It's not looking good for the Pugliese.
No, because actually Genoa looked quite good against Inter. It looked like they could have snatched a late equaliser and sort of pulled further away. And but after they lost that, there was a real opportunity for Lecce to do something. And I flicked over onto this just as they were tossing the ball into the box. I think they were too concerned with trying to call for either a foul or a handball, and then Bologna went down the other end. Goalkeeper makes a decent save, but then it's cut back to Barrow, and you could see Liverani. I think he was throwing t-shirts, jackets, whatever it was, something that he had in his hair down, or in his hand down, almost kind of knowing that if they could have just got it back to 3 points again, so you know, they could probably overturn Genoa, but I mean, that possibly was their last chance, particularly because Bologna have been so sort of lackluster, not necessarily a terrible run of form, but just looked like they've been treading water until the season's over.
Yeah, it does very much seem like the case. Vito, do you give Lecce any chance of staying up now?
No, I'm very pessimistic about Lecce, because there have been times where the opponents haven't looked overly tough, or they have been direct rivals, but they haven't taken their chances. And since Genoa had beaten them a couple of rounds ago, I've come to the conclusion that the Salentini don't really have enough in them to really have a chance of survival. I think, unfortunately, we're just seeing the Grifone limp over the line once again.
Yeah, it does seem like the case. In the other remaining games this week, we're not going to talk about them because why bother? Cagliari lost 1-0 to Udinese and Spal Torino played out a 1-1 draw. Those games had little impact anywhere on the table, both involving already relegated. Nope. One of them was involving an already relegated side. The other game was involving two sides who are very much safe already. So, we're on to the new game, guys. The nameless game, the nameless guess who game, is currently, the title is currently resting with Mr. Doria, okay? He's 3-1 up, so that's just the way it is, Kev. You'll have to get over it. You'll be happy to know that in this next game, nobody wins or loses. Okay, you cannot win or lose this, Kev. It's purely for entertainment. And we do have to actually say thank you to a listener who is called Daniel Hansen because he emailed in with a recommendation for a game. And I very much liked it. But Kev, you look confused and I've not even started to explain what the game is yet. It doesn't bode well. What's wrong?
No, I've got a way in which we can have a winner or at least a draw.
Okay, well, how do you want to implement that? Hang on, shall we? Can I explain the game to the listeners first? Because this means nothing to them until we do that. So basically, my job as host is to choose any game from the past, basically. I will tell the players, i.e. Kevin Vito, the two teams involved and when the fixture was played. Kevin Vito then have 1 minute per team to name the starting 11 by discussing with each other. And we'll see how that goes. It's a big, big test of their memories. You will see that Kev is a fraud and Vito's knowledge is impressive. I hope. If not, I'm sitting here with two frauds. But yeah, I think it's quite straightforward. We will see how it goes. Very much experimental end of the season stuff here. We'll see if we're going to carry it over to next. But Kev, what's your way of implementing competition to this?
So how I read Daniel, wasn't it?
Daniel.
How I read Daniel's suggestion was that we got a team each, and then whoever correctly named the most players of the two sides or from...
Okay, well, look, we can do that. We can do that. But then it's unfair because one player will have more time than the other.
Well, I thought, say whoever's winning, say Vito's winning, he got the choice of the side because you're going to give him the side and the date. He gets his minute to try and name all 11 players, and then I get my minute to try and... But there you go.
Right. So because Vito's winning, he chooses first. The person who chooses first gets to choose the team they want, so then the other person has more time because it's not there. Okay, right, fine. We'll try that. So I'll give you the fixture and a little bit of background so you can think, but because of the dynamics of this podcast, I'm going to need the two of you to sit in a way where I can see both of your hands because I don't want any typing on computers. So Kev, thank you very much. You can obviously write using pen and paper, but I do not want any Google searching. I want authenticity.
You'd hear me typing on the keyboard, and Vito for me is frozen, so I don't even know where he's got his hands.
Well, I can see you both. Okay, so Juve have just won their 9th consecutive title, so I thought it was fitting to go back to their first. So we're going back to February 2012. Quite a controversial fixture because Juve went away to the reigning champions AC Milan. They drew 1-1. You guys might remember this as the Sully Montari ghost goal game. Very, very exciting stuff. So the team's
player.
I've given you a player who played at some point. He might not necessarily have started in the game. So, Vito, do you want to choose Milan or Juventus's starting 11?
Ooh. Look, I'll go with Juventus because I can remember that easier.
Okay, well, I
would need 2 minutes for Milan, even for that season.
Okay, well, you have a timer that is starting in 3, 2. Well, no, it's not starting in 3, 2, 1 because I've not got the team up. Right, now, it's starting in 3, 2, 1 to name the 11. Go.
The 11. Okay, so I'm going to go Buffon in goal.
Yep.
My defence, I'll go Barzagli, Bonucci, Chiellini.
Correct.
Midfield, Lichtsteiner, Marchisio, Pirlo, Vidal, Estigarribia.
Correct.
Oh, wow. I guessed with that last one. Up front, I'll go Matri and Vucinic.
Okay, so your final score is 9 out of 11. The two missing forwards were two pod legends, actually. Marco Borriello and Fabio Quagliarella. So there you go. Kev, you've got 9 to beat. And yeah. You've got to name the AC Milan team from the back end of the 2011 and 12 season. Vito named his in 50 seconds. And he got 9. So how are you feeling?
Not confident.
Okay, well, your minute is starting in 3, 2, 1, and go.
Okay, I'm just going to run off the names I've written down. So, Abbiati.
Okay, yeah.
Bartey.
Okay.
Nesta.
Okay.
Zapata.
Okay.
Antonini.
Okay.
Oh, who's the other lad? Muntari, obviously.
Okay.
Boateng. Would okay. Ronaldinho have been there still? Rubino, Pato.
Okay.
And I'm thinking of someone that kept going back and forth from Genoa.
You've got 25 seconds, so.
Yeah, I'm not going to get any more. Ibrahimovic wouldn't have still been. To put Ibra down anyway. Oh, would Balotelli have been back there then? Yeah, no, that's me done. It's
got,
I think it's because
you've got
it's
10 that seconds to think of the guy who's back and forth from Genoa.
Oh,
what position did he play?
Midfield.
Okay, what number did he wear?
I don't know. Oh, was Walter Bierse then?
Time up. Walter Bierse went the following summer, as far as I know. Okay. Right.
Go on.
Kev, you didn't do too badly. You didn't do too badly, but you didn't beat Vito. You got 6 points. So I'll name the Milan team in full from start, from back to front. Abbiati, Abate, Mexis, Thiago Silva, Antonini.
Okay.
Antonio Nocerino was the midfielder who I think you might have been thinking of.
No, it wasn't.
Mark Van Bommel, Sully Montari, Erby Emanuelson, Alexander Pato, and Robinho. That was the 11. So there you go. Vito, just for good measure, Vucinic and Matri came off the bench for Juve. As did Simone Pepe, if everyone remembers him. And off the bench for Milan, Ambrosini and Stefan El Shaarawy, back when he was a young'un. So,
jeez.
Interesting stuff. So Vito wins the first game by a score of 9-6, which, Kev, you did better than I expected, you know?
Yeah, particularly because it was the Milan era when they'd become mediocre from pretty much that season, hadn't they?
Yeah, this was the last season when they were competent.
Yeah.
Now they went into peak banter era, Milan. But there you go. What are your thoughts on that game?
It's going to be a night which Milan Genoa player I'm thinking of.
I'm so glad I didn't pick Milan because I think I would have. I would have got about 5 or 6 as well. Yeah.
I can't believe you got Estigarribia.
Yeah, well, he went to Samp the year later, so that's probably why. And probably one of the best games of that season, in my opinion, 2011-2012, was a 3-3 draw in Naples between Napoli and Juve. And I think Estigarribia got one of the goals from memory, so that's stuck in my mind. So
he went to Atalanta after Samp, not immediately after. I think he was with Chievo before he came to Atalanta, but he didn't do all that.
He
much
did the rounds.
He's one of those.
Andrea Bertolacci.
Oh, that was long before Bertolacci, I think.
Yeah, that's who I had in my mind.
He was at Lecce that season.
Hmm. I think he probably comes into my head when I think of Milan and mediocrity.
That's not very nice, but not necessarily wrong. All right, so you guys get to decide. I don't know which game to continue. We'll see what happens on Wednesday night. I quite enjoyed this because it meant considerably less work for me once I picked the team. I didn't have to keep noting things down. So, any other business?
I got given out to by one of you last week for not asking if you had anything else to say.
No, I don't think so. I'm looking forward to Wednesday.
Are you?
No, not really.
I was going to say, have you got plans?
No.
That's nice.
No, it'll be lovely as always.
Well, there you go, listeners. That's how highly Kev thinks of you all. Direct your tweets to @rabbitrabbiton and leave me out of it. Vito, say goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone.
Mr. Pogzielski, say goodbye in Polish. That's offensive. Goodbye.
I should probably really know that. Ciao, everybody.
Cuore a strisce, portaci dove vuoi, verso le tue conquiste, dove tu arriverai, sarà la storia di tutti noi, solo chi corre può fare di te la squadra che sei. Come un abbraccio noi, e ancora non ci basta. Ogni pagina nuova, sai, sarà ancora la storia di tutti noi. Solo chi corre può fare di te quello che sei.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.